Welcome to The Frontline, the sales and marketing podcast.
Hello everyone and welcome to The Frontline Sales and Marketing Podcast, where we aim to provide entrepreneurs and enterprise leaders with the three T's, the tools, tips and techniques that help improve sales and marketing knowledge for better results. I'm here with Floris Block, Marketing Strategy, Customer Experience, Digital Transformation Expert, Jeremy Pierce, Founder at Outside Sales Training, myself, Avon Coles, CRM Marketing Automation Specialist and all-around good guy, and we have our guest, Jeremiah Shark. How are you going? Or Jeremiah Sarkett from Keep.
That could be my last name nowadays. You might as well make it that. I'm going good. It's been a awesome week. Been in some virtual summits and been doing some teaching this week. That's always fun.
Yeah, and welcome back. Obviously, if you're listening to this episode, Jeremiah was on a couple of weeks ago talking about selling to serve and the structure around sales process. And I think today we're going to dig a little bit more into the future of sales because things be changing.
Things be a changing. Jeremy was just saying the robots are coming, or I was saying that. Yeah, you're right. We think the bots are coming.
Exactly what the world economy needs right now, more fear.
Oh, yeah. So what kind of robots? What they Skynet? We're gonna have.
I went there for some reason too. I thought Terminator.
Was thinking there's actually another lady Skynet. Reached out to me on LinkedIn actually, and it's a sales AI. I don't know if you guys have. They probably reached out to you, but it's a sales AI and it monitors the chat and the voice and how you speak on over the phone and all that sort of stuff and gives reports out based on all the conversations. I can't remember what it was called. Do you guys remember what that's called? No, you're just Googling it, aren't you?
There's tons of them.
There actually? Yeah, okay.
I was speaking with someone the other day who created an AI that like starts to ask questions and interact like, yes, we can get back to you in a second. What's your first name? What's your last name? Then it starts adding it as like a CRM record. So, you know, what part of sales do you want to automate? Do you want to automate the data collection? Do you want to automate that, you know, trying to get someone to have that emotional moment where they're like, this is a problem I actually want to solve and I'm willing to spend money for it.
Well, I think this, the sales part nowadays is just coming in when a human-to-human interaction is required after somebody's basically put their hand up, right? They've interested in some sort of a product. You know, less outreach as a cold call per se, if that makes
less
sense.
Less call center. No, yeah, I feel it centers. Too. I feel it. The AI will qualify in. Let me give an example of some things that I've seen even our organization shifting a bit because of COVID, the pandemic, right? So our organization has a lead qualification team. So before you even talk to the salesperson, you got to talk to these lead dev people. And they're amazing and really good at their job. And they're qualifying in and out. And they're the gatekeepers. And they say, no, you're not qualified for us yet. Here's what you might do. In the meantime, we'll check back in with you. We put those in long-term nurture. We're doing good at following up there. But then routing right over to the sales rep. So maybe now, right, the AI is cutting portions of that out of this equation. Now costs are down, overhead, and the who's coming to work nowadays? Like it's a different game. So now the technology plays into supporting these businesses, keeping them going. Without so much overhead.
One of the things we went through and that sort of you helped with me with was the downsell. So like as far as like the qualification process, someone goes, and I read a stat a while ago that people are 51% of the way down the buyer's journey before they speak to a sales rep. And I'd say that's probably a lot further now. Like it's probably more like, you know, 55-60% because, you know, that stat was old and now we've had the pandemic and then now things be changing and everybody's pushing out for that content delivery and that demand generation side. And then, you know, we get people come to us and, you know, I spoke to someone the other day. We had a half hour Zoom. They went, it's a little bit confusing for me. I'm like, that's fine. No worries. Here's an online course and here's a book you can read in the meantime. Come back to me when you're ready. And so instead of just sort of saying, yep, that's it. We'll never do business. It's like, here's something for $20 that like you're going to get a long way down the process without me on your own for $20.
The plan for now and a plan for later. I think AI and technology helps a little bit more with that plan for later than ever before, but also that plan for now. Here's all the people that are ready now. Chat has collected the data. We were just talking before we were recording. Chat's collected the data into CRM. CRM's already repurposed that to a call to a rep with a task created right away.
Yeah.
If you're a small business or a startup, then you really need to rely on your own type of advertising and marketing, because you've got the outreach or the prospecting. I think there's like a general level that everybody says, well, if you haven't hit $20,000 a month, then I wouldn't even invest money into marketing and advertising. Do you agree with that? Is that something that you guys agree with, or?
Interesting statement. No.
It depends.
It varies. Yeah. I would say it would depend on
the industry. Yeah. Consulting based industries. I guess that was the key message.
If you're buying a widget or a product or a low value item, then, it takes like to sell one pen is going to take me time. Like unless it's $100,000 pen. Yeah. I'm going to go door to door.
That's right.
They exist if it's diamond encrusted.
Dude, there's a bookmark that Tiffany sells for your book. Like it's a little paper clip. It was like $100,000+ or something.
So like if you're going to sell a $7 widget, no, it doesn't make sense. So you need to do it at scale. So you need the advertising model, but then the advertising has to be built into the cost of the pen. So so advertising, particularly like Google and Facebook and those people that own the market, they're driving the prices up and taking the profit margins because that's where everyone is. And then there's the bidding war. So it makes you think you're betting against other people going for the same thing. Even though you kind of are, it still benefits Facebook altogether. You know, it's not like you're bidding or you're giving money to the other person. It's like your profit margin's gone. Like we've got an e-commerce product and there's very little in it after marketing. When we first started, it was costing us $10 per unit. We were making 20 profit after the cost of goods. After about, we're selling like 10 a day. Like this is just a small backyard thing.
Yeah.
And so we just went gangbusters. We put more money in, like increase the advertising. It's like, we can grow this. And then it was costing us $100 per unit to sell for a $40 item. So we were losing.
That cost of acquisitions. Yeah. That CAC's off.
And that happened really quickly. So.
Interesting.
What's a common theme between, advertising style or based products and consulting industries? What's the common theme? I think the common theme may be attention or like reach. Everybody needs that, I think.
Yeah.
I think you probably
I would agree.
I'd say it's there's a problem in the market.
Focus.
You've addressed that there's a problem. You've aggravated it sufficiently to say, well, I need to do something about this. You provide the solution. And you have some, social proof to say, all right, particularly with professional consulting, is that people don't know what they're getting until they've paid and consumed it. So they need proof from somebody else to go, actually, if they got benefit from it and, these people were happy, then, maybe I could be happy too. So that social proof is really important.
I agree with you.
100%. You can still sell without it. You could still, sell something without it, without that. And I think the first thing is like attention. The more attention in whatever your product or service is going to get you a better outcome, regardless of how good you are as a salesperson or not.
Before you come to that
attention,
before you come to that like those first sales part, that's your like your market, your consumer behaviors. So you've got your first movers and people who will try things. So your pool of customers is smaller because you're only going to get those people that are willing to experiment or give you a go.
Yeah.
Then once a few people have tried you, like even with services, but services are never the same in any one moment. They are consumed and perceived differently from every customer, but a pen is a pen, it writes for everybody. It's the same every time. So a service is completely different. So you've got to really structure, control, be able to have it so that one person has consumed, then that same service is transposed over here and over here and over here. and that people then sort of say, well, I consumed that service, you know, like travel booking as an example.
Right.
And then you can sort of, you get that social proof, and then you get
that. That's the social proof. Yeah, there's the commonality. That's it's critical right now, actually. I mean, you could sell against that, Jer, but why would you want to? Why wouldn't you just incorporate that into your process and say, but fuck it, I'm not going to mess with that, and then I'm good. Like, I'm not, the consumer says, I need to see some of that today. That's what they're wanting.
Well, that's where
I want to provide that.
That's where sales AI come in. We're talking about the robots. The sales AI is, all right, well, all of these other people behave this way in the question, in the sales process. So this person is most likely off track or on track. Try saying this, try saying that.
Timing. Now, yeah, I was just going to say now is the time. Ha! I wish one of my partners had that AI.
I just keep thinking.
He would have understood the timing.
I just
keep timing's
thinking.
Now.
I just keep thinking of like a door-to-door Arnold Schwarzenegger rocking up to your door and knocking on doors.
Buy this if you want to.
He knows he's got the perfect objection. He knows exactly what they're going to say every single time.
Yeah, and if you don't buy, he'll go, I'll be back.
I'll be back. Yeah, exactly.
Skynet again.
I'll be following up.
No, but hold on. I've been listening to you guys, and look, we have similar conversations about MarTech as well, right? Marketing technologies as well. And if we agree that marketing and sales are one, because in terms of objective, it is exactly the same, right? You are trying to sell something to people either through a marketing channel or a sales channel, but ultimately you're trying to sell something, right? So in MarTech, we have the exact same issue, which is how much of the pipeline or the funnel are you going to automate? What tools are you going to use, et cetera? And how much is AI going to affect that? And now the conversation is no longer about whether AI is going to be a part of the equation or not. It's how smart is the AI going to be in that equation. So let's use a common example. One of the things that most sales organizations struggle with is having multiple pipelines, right? And for multiple pipelines that ultimately end up at the same bottleneck, which is the actual sales, you've got multiple different strategies in at the top of the pipeline to try and, you know, get either awareness, reach, information sharing, etc. Would it be then conceivable that the AI would be much quicker, more versatile in actually adapting to the different ICPs, for example, around the top of the funnel, and then educate them downwards towards the bottleneck?
So more lead generation style. Is that,
yeah,
is that where you're going? Utilizing them for mainly lead generation instead of anything else?
Well, look, there's a lot of the AI in terms of the automation of the data capture and the data digestion, if you wish, and processing. That's a given, right? And a lot of it can already be done through RPA and no CRM, for example. And customer data platforms are getting more and more popular. So data processing is a given for AI. The question is, how is actually AI or smart AI, how are they going to actually help with the lead generation, if you wish, and actually adapt to people and help them down that funnel?
I think it's a bit of educate, provide value, build initial trust, because there's, the psychology says early on in the process that you have a certain amount of time to move them to the next bit of the buyer's journey, if you will. So if you delay there or mess that, like, you just don't move them at all. Yeah. They just go somewhere else where they're going to find movement, where they're going to find the guide. We're supposed to be the guide, not the hero in this process. Yeah. So the AI needs to be the guide to educate, provide value, build trust, get them to raise their hand. As soon as that happens, I believe the human interaction is still critical in most sales organizations. And that's where the hand is also flagged and raised to the CRM, to the team to go now.
And that was
now, like, what do you, yeah.
That was going to be my next question. You know, will it replace salesperson and the human in the sales process? Or does it give them more time to provide better customer service? I suppose that's a question mostly for like management and where they want to go. But in a world where we've got, 86% of people will pay more for a better customer experience, and a better customer experience would be, the system identified exactly in the, when they're ready. They got
that's awesome. I knew it was high. I didn't think it was that high. 86%.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it, like if they get a call right at the perfect moment and then they're super attentive and they give them plenty of time, like it just feels
really, question of really industry, well. Question of industry again then.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
But no, but the basics, I think, are sound, right? Which is people are looking for a human contact. There's a lot now in sense of like AI chatbots. They're great in terms of the customer experience because customer expectations are that, you know, if you ask a question, you want an immediate answer because, you know, you've got busy lives, you're on your mobile phone and you don't have a lot of time to wait for someone to come back, a chat agent or whatever. You want that answer straight away. So there's a certain expectation of what chatbots are acceptable usage for or have an acceptable usage. So there are a very wide range of use cases, but they're still not about closing a deal. Closing a deal is pretty much still a human interaction. Or is that not correct?
I think it varies on industry. I think before we were recording, Jer was on it. He was saying, an AI-led webinar, like holy mackerel, AI-led web sales webinar, like, yeah. And you get out of that webinar and 34 deals rolled in, and who cares? Like, I don't know what price point and what product, like industry again, but like, that's a cool vision, like, and that might be the case where, you know, you've got your sales reps, floors back at HQ pounding or virtually wherever they are pounding and dialing their own pipes and moving their stages. And then you got the AI over here doing these virtual webinars and closing 34 deals. And it's like, who's going to win, the robots or the dudes today?
Yeah.
What else is there in the future of tech? I know we've spoken so much about AI specifically, but what else in the future of sales can we look forward to, or is there any challenges in the future?
I think you've got a lot of, I suppose, fear in terms of salespeople, in that some salespeople have got their groups of lists, their groups of people, their contacts and relationships, and they kind of hold a bit of power and they're like, they've got everything in spreadsheets, they've got everything in post-it notes. But when the data is clear and open and usable across a wider system, it becomes a little bit more of everybody's and shared. Yeah. Sorry?
Collaborative,
yeah, which is also means that someone
integrative, like, yeah,
I'm the breadwinner anymore. So that maybe there's collaborative is good, but then that's going to change the sales industries. I mean, you before when Jeremy was talking about industry, I was just thinking back. I was speaking with a real estate agent the other day, and they said they don't care about the buyers, they don't care about the sellers. All they care about is the listings. So the sales don't actually matter as long as you hold the listings on your thing.
Someone's going to win eventually. Yeah.
Someone's
going to
buy.
That's a numbers game though. What about the car industry though? What about the car industry in the future? What does that look like? Do you still show up to a lot? Do you still show up to a lot and talk to somebody?
Well, didn't Tesla lose a case in the US where they're no longer allowed to do direct to consumer sales online?
No, really? Wow. That would
I believe
big.
So. I didn't read the...
Their stock's been down all week, it seems like, in the week before. Maybe that's like...
Yeah. Well, exactly. The stocks are down and a certain person has lost a couple billion in market capital. But I think the direct-to-consumer, and because legislation, you know, this is where we get into a conversation of how much reach can a government should or could need to have, right? But in this particular case, I think they were shut down for direct to consumer. But the question still is a valid question. Will we in the future, well, first of all, will there be cars to buy in the future? Or is it all going to be co-ownership and ride sharing or collaborative ownership? And then is the buying process an online process? Like, for example, sticking a VR camera inside the car so that you can actually, you know, do a 360 visit of the car even without actually leaving the house? Or is it going to be similar to now where most car salespeople have a humongously bad rep?
I think it's like anything, right? One, crowd sharing, two, referring, three, like just say, for example, Flight Center, when they took out one of the brands of theirs from their website, that company went bust, but they're just a retailer on seller of another travel, like of a flight company, right? They're just an on seller, but they provided so much, like they provided so many sales for that company, they went bust. So it's like the same with the cars. If you get rid of like on sellers, then, you know, people still, there'll still be people, there'll still be a market for people wanting to come in and drive test drives, because that's really important, test driving. And there'll also be the other phase, which is, you know, you want to check out the cars online. But how was it? I spoke to my uncle yesterday. He's a car salesman, and how he operates now is he has somebody that goes out to people's houses.
Yeah.
With the car. For the test drive.
Yeah.
So the sales guy goes out and just helps them with their finances, and they get the car across the line. But he'll go out, chauffeur out to the house, test drive it with them, and then obviously, you know, do their sales process. But it all comes from it'll come from online, right? It'll come from you know, your car sales or your car selling websites, and that's where they get the leads. The leads come in, they'll go out to the houses and do that. Which is weird. Interesting model.
The buying process changes. Like, when you go in a car, that you walk in, they sit you down in this waiting room, they go off and do stuff in this room, and then they're like, all right, I've got to go talk to the finance manager now. It's like, this is my time. That's a you problem. Like, why am I here? Mm-hmm. It could just be, I want that one. Okay, no worries. It'll be delivered to your house tomorrow. Sign here, 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 and here. Have a great one.
But it's still, they're supposed to be there trying to solve your problem and find the need for you, because a lot of people will walk in and go, I want this car. And then they ask them a couple of questions and they go, you don't need that car at all. And they go, oh, right. You know, like, they're still trying to, still there to try to solve that problem and help them and assist them in trying to figure that out.
Process has changed for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot more now. Again, it's all about the customer experience, right? So we see a lot of direct to consumers that are actually moving from a centralized selling point or a point of sales to a more individual and personalized point of sales. There is an ad here on TV in Australia for a mattress vendor, and they actually have a king size mattress inside the back of a van, and they will drive up to your house and you can lay in it and you can test it. Another brand will sell you the mattress for 30 days, free of charge, delivered and picked up if you don't want it. And it's all changed, right? It
makes it easy. How easy is that? Like, geez. Yeah.
Mm. I mean,
it's almost like meeting your consumer more than where they are in the process. Yeah. It's like,
Amazon now approved in Australia. They've approved for drone delivery. So product within 3 hours or 30 minutes even.
What?
Yeah, it's an Amazon. It's an Amazon test drive, if you wish, or a proof of
out of the blimp, out of the big blimp.
Yeah, that video. Yeah, that.
No, it's down in the. it's down in Canberra, and they are actually testing drone delivery. You know, one of those big.
That's really cool.
Drones with the 8 blades, and they're looking at actually dropping packages from the sky. And I can only imagine the suits or the cords.
I feel like bang somebody in the
head. Like, what happened to you? Well, I had an Amazon box drop on my head.
It's raining books.
And then the question becomes, who's liable then from a risk management? Is it the drone operator? Is it the vendor? Is it the manufacturer? Is it the drone?
The drop shipper.
There's too much humor in all of that. Like, we can see on this for a bit, and this would be a little bit.
Flying over people's houses, and because they've got the camera on where they got to land, but what if rocking around in your sunbathers or, you know, your privacy? Or
massive invasion of privacy.
Yeah, it's nude sunbathing, I don't know, whatever floats your boat.
That's what's going on over at AC's pad. Like,
actually,
right over your house.
Little kids running around, you know, you can't always control their
Amazon's on the fringe of always invading privacy in a lot of the way that they're doing their business.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. Their suppliers, their data.
Literally this morning, just before I came on, I was reading an article about how Apple says no and Amazon says yes to product concepts.
Just do everything.
Right. And to explain what that is. So Apple model of saying no is basically being very selective in their product strategy, right? One phone, maybe 2 or 3 different sizes now since Steve Jobs passed away, right? Before that it was, oh, it's got to be within the radius of your thumb size, right? That has completely changed because the market, of course, wants more different sizes. One tablet, one watch, one earbuds, and all of them, they work seamlessly, etc. So Apple very, very clear in the way they do their product strategy. And again, I'm a product management veteran. So they're very consistent, and they will take their time. Even if they're not first to market, they will take their time, and they'll do it. Then they'll do it right. Right. So that's Apple. Amazon, on the other hand, is, oh, whatever idea is coming up through the innovation labs at Amazon, let's turn it into a proof of concept. We'll put it out into the market. If it sells, it sells. If it doesn't sell, we'll bin it and we'll move on to the next one. And that's a cultural thing within Amazon.
Crazy.
Right?
I think they also own so many companies as well.
Exactly. I mean, it took a 3-page article by, I think, the Washington Post to try and figure out all the different companies that Amazon owns and that Jeff Bezos himself has actually fingers in, right?
Jeez.
So yes or no, are you a bit more selective? And again, the question can be transposed over to your sales process. Do you want to go and hit every single customer profile out there with your product? Or do you have an ideal one and you select that one and you communicate primarily to that one?
Depends.
That's that narrow focus.
There's also this, this MLM concept that really took Amazon off, that's what exploded the company. Amazon, the shipping and, product company, is that the whole MLM drop shipping feature that the platform has.
Build your business on Amazon.
You build your business mm-hmm. on it, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, you see that's still the rallying cry for all of the gurus out there that are trying to sell the Amazon courses. You see the YouTube mm-hmm. ads, and it's like, that's everybody's message.
Well, if you get volume,
interesting, cheeky.
And that's what they're going for. You get enough volume, they up the price by 1 cent, they make another $3 billion. So yeah. Then once you own the market, then you can march that up pretty quickly.
Loris, love that.
Imagine if you want to sell, you go, all right, well, we're going to double our prices overnight and own the world.
But look, so, something you mentioned before, which is actually quite relevant. And since we are talking about cost, and you also mentioned cost of acquisition, with the pandemic that happened, a lot of people basically cut out their sales and marketing budgets. I personally think that's a mistake, right? Because especially during a pandemic, when your sales are down and everyone is struggling, you actually want to position yourself as a brand that actually cares, etc. That's from a branding point of view. But you also want to be there so that you continue your sales, because otherwise without marketing, you have no sales. And without sales, you have no marketing, because marketing is a percentage of sales revenue. Anyway, do you then, with a cost of acquisition in mind and with AI in mind as well, where do you sit at your decision-making process for your focus in terms of investing and not investing during times of crisis?
I think it'll depend on who you are and what industry you're in and what you're facing. But I think that the concept of cutting is, I agree with you, probably the wrong first initial step to... You wouldn't go, oh, we need to cut. You would go, we need to examine, we need to explore, and we probably double down before we cut. Yeah. Is how I'm probably coming to that table and working with my teams and my partners on that. But no, I don't think you cut, and I think you double down, but I think you need to examine, and it depends on who you are and what you're in.
I think it changes the battle from most sales or most profitability to market share. Either retention of or claiming back. So even if you do things at cost or below, it's the numbers game that's gonna keep you alive at the other end.
No, you're right. And the retention of during this time, I think. Correct. Yeah.
There's such a large macroeconomic force at play as well. So the uncertainty in the world's gonna change, and you can't change the buyer's certainty levels if the whole entire planet is uncertain about where it's going. So there's definitely going to be cuts and reductions overall as a macro force, right? So your business is always going to drop. But it's like, you need to focus on nurturing and focus on the mentality of growing for later.
Mm.
Nurturing those customers for a long game. If that makes sense. So
I like that.
All right, so we're getting to the end of our time here today. Do we have any closing comments, or did you want to have a closing word for words of advice from Jeremiah?
Robots.
The end of the session.
Just robots.
Robots.
Robots are coming. New robots. Like, yeah, Skynet's this year, I think. Sounds like it's over Australia right now.
But I don't think they're here to replace us. I think they're here to enhance us.
Yeah, here to aid us, hopefully, if done properly, like Forrest was saying, and Jared. Yeah.
Yeah, unless someone accidentally does the wrong line of code, and then we're all screwed. So.
And they're dropping the boxes on our heads.
Yeah. Death from above. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us again here today. And if anyone wants to get in touch with Jerry, they can get onto him by LinkedIn. That's Jeremiah Sarkat, or you can go to jeremiahshark.com and you can check out some of his coaching products. In closing, also, if you have any topics for you wish for us to discuss, or if you have any questions, please jump on to thefrontlinepodcast.com. Check us out on all of the socials and do join us next time on The Frontline. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to the Sales and Marketing Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode and hope to see you again soon on The Frontline.